Tottenham story is this. It's time to change the situation if Tottenham want to change.
I love to win, mate. That's the main thing. Hopefully I can fulfil those dreams and aspirations of every Tottenham supporter.
And still Ricky Villa. What a fantastic run. He scored.
He's going to have a crack. He is, you know. Oh!
I'm loving big engines instead. Guess I'm a Spurs fan now then.
Well, hello everybody and welcome to an immediate reaction to Tottenham's fantastic, formidable 4-0 victory at Villa Park. I think it was beyond everybody's wildest expectations. Such an important game in terms of the race to finish in the top four. I'm Marcus Buckland. Tom Barkley is with me. Tom from The Sun. He's actually parked just outside the stadium. And it's gridlocked at the moment. So he's got an opportunity to give us his thoughts directly. First things first, Tom, as we said in the build-up, really this was a game Spurs couldn't afford to lose. Is it fair to say that they hardly ever did look like losing it, even when Villa had 11 men?
Yeah, hi Marcus. Not really. I was pretty disappointed with Villa overall. First half, there really wasn't much in it. It was quite a dull first half. And actually, the way Emery set up came as a bit of a surprise, speaking to some of the guys who cover Villa regularly. So he went to a back five, which he has done before, but apparently not for quite a long time, playing Pau Torres and our old friend Clement Longley in a back sort of three centre backs with Cash, who obviously got a lot of abuse from the Spurs fans, which we can come on to later if you want, and Digne at left wing back. And it was almost like that the message of from playing in that position sort of suggested that they would right from the off be sort of okay with a point because it would keep Spurs at arm's length. And in that first half, neither side really did anything of any merit. There was hardly any chances, and it just felt like one of those games, which so often is, that builds as sort of exciting matches coming up that mean a lot. Nothing really happens. But obviously it all changed in the second half and Spurs went on to another gear and showed what they're capable of and why fans generally are so excited about the Ange Postecoglou tenure.
Yeah, I have to be honest, at halftime, I sent out a little tweet and said that obviously there was lots of neat passing again from Tottenham playing out from the back skillfully, smoothly. We've become accustomed to that, but there was no killer pass, no final ball to unlock that Villa defence. And I was a little concerned at halftime because there'd been one or two unforced errors at the back from Spurs, which had opened the door for Aston Villa. And I did fear at that stage that maybe we were going to be undone by that in the second half. But Spurs seemed to have this fantastic ability, not just to score once, but then to get a second goal. And, you know, from the moment, Tom, that Maddison turned in that wonderful cross from Saar, and then Johnson doubled the lead. As you say, Villa looked bemused. I love the fact that Unai Emery was so frustrated because I've been haunted by his screams of delight when they nicked those points at Tottenham earlier in the season. And then, of course, McGinn got sent off as well. Do you think that was a red card?
Yes, definitely. I think so. I mean, I think John McGinn is one of the more erudite, likeable characters in football. Anyone who's interviewed him would agree with that. And I don't think he's a dirty player. So I don't think there was much malice involved, which is the word that Postecoglou used. He said that exact phrase. I don't think there was much malice in it. When I asked him about it afterwards, and Unai Emery also said he didn't think there was any intent there. And I would sort of agree in terms of, I don't think he's that kind of, the classic, I don't think he's that kind of player. But I do think it was a sign of how frustrated Villa were at that point. And it was an uncharacteristically wild and aggressive challenge in Udogie. It was interesting it was McGinn, to be honest, because McGinn was the one who kind of really gave this game its billing ahead of it by saying this was the most important league game that Villa had for many years going into it, knowing that had they beaten Spurs, it would have been, what, an 8-point gap and would have not completely guaranteed them finishing in the Champions League spots, but would have given them a great chance to do it. So how ironic that it was he who sort of appeared to kind of lose his head in the second half. But having said that, Spurs were probably already home and hosed by then. I mean, I guess if Villa had scored and it'd been 11 men each, 2-1, maybe not. But they did look pretty comfortable. And I think this game, particularly from a Postecoglou and his coaching staff's point of view, was a really satisfying match because all the goals, I mean, he mentioned this afterwards, were kind of off the training pitch, stuff they'd worked on a lot. You know, you talk about that Saar delivery, which is one of the sort of most easy on the eye crosses that I've seen for a long time. I mean, Madison's good finish too, but it was all about that delivery. I think that's presumably something they've worked on. And, you know, we all know about Spurs, the way they, how they do things with cutbacks, like with the Werner finish, which is a very good finish, which, you know, another, I guess Timo Werner is another little subplot here, which we could come into in a bit. But, you know, overall, Spurs, who at times, and again, this is something that Ange touched on in his post-match press conference, at times this season, they've been a little, just haven't quite got enough out of that attacking front three. And he actually said, you know, that the area where I feel like we haven't quite got enough bang for our buck, that was the phrase he used, but given the chances they create. I thought today they were pretty clinical and took the chances really well. So that's really encouraging in what was, on the face of it, one of the most highly pressurised games they've had this season.
Yes, certainly in the second half, they took their chance as well. I mean, I was a little frustrated, and I have been not just in the first 45 minutes today, but in the past few games, that at times it seems to me as though we are just playing one or two passes too many, not trying to get a ball into the box and see what might happen. But it didn't really matter. I mean, Sonny's finish was fantastic as well. You mentioned Timo Werner, who's now got 2-2. Actually, you know, let's just reflect on that because he had a very good game last weekend against Crystal Palace. I was a little surprised that he wasn't in the starting lineup today, but he comes on, he scores, and that's the key, isn't it? If he gets his confidence in front of goal, then we're all going to start saying that £50 million is a bit of a bargain. That's a word you like to use, of course. Do you live in a £50 million world? But come on, in football terms, if he can kick on from here, Tom, I'm going to start being a Werner believer, are you?
Well, no, I mean, as I said from the off, I think 15 million for a forward in the Premier League is a snip, and he's definitely worth it. It's more the sort of, as they'd say in economics, the opportunity cost. If you buy him, does it mean you don't then go and spend a lot of money on somebody else? And actually, in the build-up to this game, Ange Postecoglou was quite interesting in his press conference about what might happen going forward, because he ruled out basically Spurs ever spending £100 million on a player. And then he kind of wrote back on it a bit, but effectively said both his own perspective is that he'd rather have two £50 million players rather than one £100 million player. But basically said, you know, that's not really how they're going to go about doing things, which kind of begs the question, why, given that Spurs are now the richest club in London, make nearly £5 million every home game, and likely to be in the Champions League. And from my perspective, I've said this a few times, I think if they really want to kick on, the squad is getting fuller and fuller. It's about spending big on sort of one or two top players to improve the first 11, particularly in those attacking positions. And I actually put that to him after he'd said about this £100 million player the other day, you know, the fact that they wouldn't spend that kind of money, and he completely disagreed, which is not to be honest surprising. He normally disagrees with anything I say or a lot of journalists say in press conferences, but he thinks there's, you know, a whole long way to go from the squad. He feels like there's loads of things he still wants to do. So presumably the sort of backup goalkeeper and the backup left back that Dan keeps banging on about as being so important to Spurs going forward is probably what he's thinking as well, maybe. But yeah, but back to Werner, you know, like I say, like £15 million, you know, for a player that can finish like that is a snip. And, you know, you talk about confidence. I thought Brennan Johnson, from what I saw, was an embodiment of that, of having confidence, and how his recent performances, where the pressure's been taken off him just a little bit by not having to play every single minute, not be so heavily relied upon. Now he's starting to flourish. And even in the first half, which wasn't a lot to write home about from a Tottenham point of view, particularly from the attacking perspective, there are just a few sort of moments on the ball that sort of suggested that he was feeling a bit more sort of confident in his own skin in a Tottenham shirt, you know, like wanting to try and make things happen. And the fact that Son chose to pass to him rather than Kulusevski, which he could have gone either way. I mean, maybe I'm reading too much into it, but it suggests, you know, Sonny's got more confidence in him to finish it, and he did it in a very clinical way. So, yeah, another success story from what was a very satisfying day.
Yeah, I agree with you. I thought Johnson was excellent right from the word go. We all know that he still needs to improve that final pass, but it's easier said than done. But I love his silky first touch. I thought that throughout the course of the afternoon, just about every Spurs player did something special, including, by the way, and even Kilpatrick will have to acknowledge this, when Højbjerg came on in the last few minutes, he went forward. I think he sort of shimmied past one player, dummied another, and then played a terrific forward pass. And I do like Højbjerg, and I know he's going to leave in the summer, but I think he's going to have some big moments between now and the end of the season. The other worrying moment today, of course, Tom, was when Van de Ven went down early in the second half. Now, we saw on television that Dragosin was warming up at halftime, so clearly there was an issue, and they decided very early in that second period to take him off. And he's so unbelievably good. Again, we saw that blistering pace today. He's a remarkable player. He's such an important player. Any idea as to the extent of his injury this afternoon?
No, I'm not quite sure even what it is specifically. We did ask about it, obviously, in the post-match press conference. The good news is that Ange Postecoglou said, he said he wasn't too sure, but he said he didn't think it was anything too significant, which is encouraging, as was the fact that even when he went down, and just a moment before, he sort of flung himself at this Leon Bailey shot, who ironically was actually offside in the end. Another classic case of an offside flag taking ages to go up. And I always have a worry that might lead to players getting injured. But I don't know if that was even related, but it was, you know, seconds later after that sort of phase of play had ended that he then went down. But then he did then walk off the pitch. A bit of treatment. It wasn't like, you know, having to come off obviously on a stretcher or in agony. He walked off the pitch and then slowly down the tunnel, and probably hadn't even made it back to the dressing room before Maddison had put Spurs 1-0 up. But he didn't look in, you know, real discomfort. And Postecoglou's comments afterwards sort of suggested that, you know, hopefully that won't be too long. And obviously it gave us a chance, really for the first time in an important game, to see old Radu Dragosin, who's was so much the focus of January. And, you know, are we going to get him? The whole battle with Bayern, who ended up getting Eric Dier, who's now having an amazing time out there. So, which is great to see. I know a lot of Spurs fans might not agree with that, but, you know, anyone who's interviewed him, and I know you sort of personally like him a lot. I mean, that's good to see. I think that's great that he's doing so well over at Bayern with Harry Kane. But yeah, Dragosin, finally got to see him. And I have to admit, I mean, when those goals were going in and John McGinn's red cards happened, from a match report perspective, I sort of already got in mind how I was going to go about it. And so I was kind of head down writing a bit, but so I don't think I really got too much of an idea of how well he played. Can you, maybe you'd be able to give a better indication of how impressed you were, hopefully?
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. It was, in hindsight, a really good time for him to come on and have his first substantial period of action in the first team. Now, he got booked quite early. I thought that was unfair. He'd tangled up with, I forget who it was, and the free kick was given to Villa. And really, he didn't have time to get 10 yards back before the ball was blasted at him. So I thought he was unfair to get the yellow card. Initially, I thought his distribution was a little bit questionable, certainly in comparison to Romero, who, by the way, apart from one moment where he gave the ball away in the first half, I thought was such a commanding presence again, and a responsible presence. We all know, of course, the fact that he's not getting booked anymore. I was kind of waiting for the moment he'd go in and destroy Cash, which of course would be an awful thing to do, but would have got a huge, great cheer. But, you know, the distribution of Romero and Van de Ven is so good that Dragosin's got a lot to live up to. But I thought after that, he was fine. And, you know, if Van de Ven's going to be out for a little while, perhaps this is a good stage in the season, because we've got Fulham next weekend. And then it's a dark week before the Luton game. So Dragosin may get an opportunity now. I think he's OK. I wouldn't want to pass judgment, but I'm glad he's going to get a chance. And of course, Ben Davis, if necessary, can come back in, and I think he's been excellent when he's had to play this season as well. So potentially another plus, but I'm encouraged to hear you say that in all probability, Van de Ven is not going to be sidelined for too long. And Tom, just in terms of the significance of the result, you know, we did say that probably if Spurs had lost today, 8 points behind Villa, okay, with the game in hand, but that game is at Chelsea, it was going to be a tall order to get into the top four. And there were some disappointing results for English teams in Europe during the week, you know, so maybe fifth place is it's still possible. It's not as likely as it was before.
I'm not sure
the
about
midweek
that.
Set of fixtures. Do you not think, because Brighton lost, Villa
yeah,
didn't win,
know.
West Ham lost?
It sounds like there is that. West Ham, Brighton never going to, surely won't come back from that. But from what it sounds like, it seems like Germany, I think if I got this right, so it's between Germany, England and Italy, but the two of them will get
Yes.
there. And it
Correct.
sounds like it's based, Germany might be too far ahead, but I'm trying to remember if it's Germany or Italy, but basically it seems like England are quite likely, more than I thought, even with that result. West Ham will probably have to turn it around against Freiburg. But then I think if they do that, obviously that knocks out Freiburg, a German team. And I think we're just left with Bayern Munich after that from the German team. Because Leipzig obviously went out to Real Madrid. So if I've got this right, now I'm saying all this, I wonder if someone's probably going to catch me out. But speaking to the guys when I was doing the press conference the other day about this, it seems like fifth place could still be quite a possibility. So all this talk about this particular game being having so much on the line might not be, ironically, not be as important as it was. But, you know, onto your wider question, I mean, I thought it was very important in terms of this sort of battle with Villa. And Postecoglou doesn't like these questions about sort of putting limitations on his team. And everyone seems to talk about it being going for fourth. It's fourth is the be all and end all. And even today, because obviously the 4-0 win was pretty huge for goal difference, wasn't it? Because obviously impacted Villa a lot and boosted Spurs. And I actually put it to him, you know, is this important? And he said, for what? With a smile on his face, like knowing I was, you know, the battle for fourth against Aston Villa. And he sort of, you know, let me away with it. But he, you know, he still, I think he genuinely still believes that Spurs could be in a title race. It feels like that would be a really tall order. But having said that, they haven't lost to any of those big teams this season, and they've got to play them all. If they can beat them all, then who knows? But I think we're all sort of not sure, that we're skeptical that is likely to happen. But
listen, I'm an optimist, Tom, whenever I can be. We are not going to win the league. I like what he's saying, though, and it's such a comparison to the days of Conte, when, you know, if we don't get relegated, basically we should be pleased with ourselves. So I like his mantra. And it's a good point you make about the goal difference, because we're plus 20 now. Villa dropped down to plus 18. So it could come down to that. And the other thing, with, you know, if fifth place is important, as awkward or rather as ordinary as they are, Manchester United aren't out of that race either. So I'm pleased we've kept that 6-point gap between them and United. And I hope Villa get through, A, because of, you know, the coefficient thing, B, because obviously they're going to get tired. That was their 41st game of the season today. And Spurs are only going to play 41 games all season. That's got to be an advantage. We've got to make the most of that. So everything seems to be fitting into place. And just the confidence we get from that sort of a performance, for me, it's huge. And we can now look ahead to Fulham next weekend. That's winnable as well, isn't it? I mean, they're a strange team, but we also owe them one for the one mistake Postecoglou made way back in August when he didn't play his full strength team in the League Cup.
Yeah, true. I mean, Fulham are a difficult team, aren't they? They seem to be able to turn it on every so often, and I've had a pretty good season, given they lost their main man Mitrovic in the summer. But we'll look ahead to that game in the week, no doubt. But I just think, reflecting on this game, it just sort of sums up why fans are so excited about the Postecoglou era. This is what they are capable of, and there seems like there is definitely more to come to be able to do this at Aston Villa. I think I heard that it might be the second joint worst defeat Emery's ever had, or home defeat, and that's no mean feat. As sort of poor as they were at times today, it was more Spurs being really excellent. And I saw on Twitter that apparently Mother's Day last year, must have been a different date compared to this, was the weekend of the Southampton game. Where Conte
the famous rant,
particularly to Dan. And obviously we know what happened from there. So, you know, it's a cliche, but it's amazing how much can change in a year. And you just think of the good feeling that's going on at this club right now compared to that miserable day back in March a year ago. I mean, it really just shows you how far they've come.
Absolutely. And on Mother's Day, it was appropriate that a son was man of the match. I mean, he was quiet in the first half. What a thumping finish, though, for that third goal involved with the assist for Johnson as well. Just love him. Contract talks are continuing, and I believe the club are very confident of getting that sorted as well. I think that more or less covers the nuts and bolts of this one. What's the traffic looking like? Is Villa Park one of those grounds? I know Old Trafford is horrendous. I always, always recall dreadful FA Cup semi-final up there donkeys years ago when we lost to Arsenal. And of course, you just want to get away. And 2.5 hours later, we were still stuck in traffic. We could still see the bloody stadium behind us. Is Villa Park a bit like that?
Spaghetti Junction. I've never been a huge fan of... I've come to Villa a lot, particularly when I used to cover the Football League and they were in that championship those couple of seasons. Yeah, it's always difficult getting out here, but I'm not going to be one of those journalists who moans about things like that. I know how lucky I am to get to come to these games. So that's the way it goes.
Absolutely. And you can reflect on a fantastic win for Spurs. Tom Barkley, the Sun, thank you very much indeed. So Tottenham moved to within 2 points of Villa with a game in hand. That game in hand is at Chelsea. Of course, we'll be back during the week to reflect in more detail the events in Birmingham and look ahead to the game on Saturday evening at Craven Cottage. But everything's looking rosy at the moment. I'm Marcus Buckland. Come on, you Spurs.